Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to episode 8 of the HRO Adventures podcast. This is Dave, and I'm here with Rusty. Good morning, Rusty.
Good morning, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing good. And we have a special guest with her, Pastor Dave Herlocker. So, Dave, good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Great. We're broadcasting from the Everett Church of Christ Euphrata. Church of Christ over in Euphrata, Washington. So thanks for providing a spot for us.
We're glad you're here.
Well, Rusty, welcome back to episode 8.
Oh, man. That's pretty exciting. We're two-thirds of the way through of what our little test was, and we're just getting better at this, I think. I'm feeling more comfortable.
Can't get any worse.
we have done a couple of those, yes. Yeah. For those of you still hanging in there, we appreciate
in there.
That.
Yeah. Well, so what's happened since the last podcast on episode 7? You've got a couple items down here.
I do.
And what's the biggest one?
The biggest one is I became a grandfather.
Wow.
So, yeah, my son and his wife had a baby girl and last week, and that was way cool.
Wow. Congratulations.
You know, grandfathers and grandmothers get, 7-8 months after the notice that we're going to become that, and so it was funny. Dave's wife Teresa had reminded me, and Jackie a couple months ago when I said, "Yeah, we get to become a grandfather back, in April." And she's going, "You're already a grandfather.
That's right.
But you just don't get to meet her until April."
Yeah.
I go, "Oh, yes, that is so true."
That's cool.
Once you get to meet them, my goodness, I have. It's hard for me to explain. I don't know how you can explain becoming a grandparent. It's just, it's totally different than becoming a parent.
Yeah. It's a different level.
It is. It's a whole different level of love.
Oh,
yes, it is.
Neat. And what's her name?
Her name is Hazel Marie.
Oh, so
Hazel
pretty.
Marie. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Kind of throwback name of what I would say was an old time name, but
yeah, very classy.
Yeah,
name.
But it seems to be making a comeback. So
some of those neat names are coming back.
They
right
are,
there,
so. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, and they wouldn't tell us what the name is. So for about 3 months now, we've been calling it Baby H.
Interesting.
So as I'm getting my chances to hold her whenever the grandmothers will let me.
good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I've decided I'm just going to continue with H.
Okay.
So I like Hazel. I think it's beautiful, but I got to have my own little twist of things.
There you go.
We'll see how long it lasts.
So what's your grandpa name?
Well, I'm willing to let Hazel pick
my
grandpa name. And I think the other grandpa is too.
Yeah.
But grandmothers, they take that a little more seriously.
They've had it picked out for a long time.
Most definitely.
Yeah, so I have realized that all of a sudden your grandparent name is important.
Define the remainder of your time here, won't it?
Exactly.
Granny and Big Mama are the ones that Teresa wanted to avoid.
Yeah, exactly. Congratulations.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool. That is very cool. And I got a chance to see Hazel just before we went up to the SCI banquet.
Oh, you did?
So that was kind of nice to be able to see her and her mom and her dad, and because they're trying to be parents too, and not manage grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
So we asked to come and visit, but I'm sure that'll all go away here pretty quick.
Yeah.
But I went up to the SCI banquet on Saturday.
Okay, how was that?
The Inland Empire chapter. They had asked me for a donation last year. We put in at the last minute a donation just to kind of get in with those guys, and they got something for their auction. And this year we actually worked at it a little bit. We put together a pretty nice package for them so that they could put it in their auction. Their auctions now, their live auctions for any of these SCI chapters are all online now.
Hmm.
So people were bidding on these items that weren't even at the auction.
That's cool.
At the banquet. So yeah, that was an interesting thing. So that was interesting. I had people calling me prior to the auction asking me about the item.
Oh.
What does this mean? How does this work? And so that's a when you're donating to an auction or whatever, the people that are there are the ones that are going to see it.
Yeah.
But to have it go worldwide over the internet and have people from Indiana and Pennsylvania mm-hmm. bidding on your trip, it's kind of like, wow, that's a little bit bigger than what I was expecting, you know? And so that was pretty cool. They also did something at an auction I've never heard of before, never seen before, and they call it a bump. And so they had a rifle that they were, you know, going to raffle off.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to get into the rifle auction or the rifle raffle was at the end of every live auction item. Mm-hmm. If it got $500 or more, you could bump $100. And so at the end of the auction, there's only 35 people that are going to be in the drawing for the rifle.
Interesting.
Okay. Well, it was a really nice rifle. Well, yeah, if you're going to make $3,500, well, but you had to buy an item. If you bought the item, you were the first one. If you want to bump it, and there's only one bump per item. So they buy the item and they bump it and it goes up. Well, everybody that was buying items was bumping them, so you couldn't get in unless you had bought an item.
Good
well,
night.
Then all of a sudden, somebody from Ohio bought an African safari.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, if you're online, you don't get a chance. You have to be at the banquet to bump.
Okay.
Okay? So that item, well, some of these other guys that knew how this game was played, all of a sudden, he throws up his number, and he bumps, and I'm like, wait a minute. You can get in on this and not buy an item. So it took me about halfway through the auction before I finally got the guy's attention, you know. And so I finally got in on it. Well, then all of a sudden the tables around me go, how'd you do that? Well, then you don't want to tell them because that's just more competition.
Yeah.
I see how this goes.
It became really fun and really, it was a great way to raise money. And just kind of an extra item in there.
Yeah.
So it was kind of fun that way. But met some great people. Melissa Bachman was the.
I saw that.
Was the.
Yeah. And she's doing fishing stuff
guest.
Now, I know.
Well, she is going to film a sturgeon trip. And you could have bought it, if you'd been there, Dave, you could have bought a chance to go fishing with her and be on TV with Melissa Bachman. That was hilarious. I love those kind of auctions and those kind of things that are playing along. Melissa's son shot his first turkey at 3 years old.
Wow.
Okay. Well, Melissa's married to a game agent. I think they live in South Dakota or North Dakota.
That's what I remember. Yeah,
something like that. And
but she kind of disappeared for a little while too.
Yeah.
So,
and so, but their youngest child, I think she's got four or five, but her youngest child, Jack. At 3 years old, he shot his first turkey.
Wow.
Okay, and they have it on film. So they show all this. Well, it was just hilarious watching him shoot and do the whole thing with mom and dad in the blind and a cameraman. I've been in a blind with all this, and that's a lot of moving parts, especially with sound equipment and everything else.
No.
And so watching all that was just fantastic, hilarious, right?
Yeah.
Well, then she showed a video that he just made because now he's seven or
okay.
So this will be his fourth turkey this year. So he shot three more turkeys. So he's six.
Wow.
Okay. Well, they put up the camera and everything, and then he gave us all a tutorial on how to call turkeys.
Wow.
A 6 year old showing you how to use a reed mouth call and call turkeys.
Hmm.
And not only did he tell us how to do it, he told us how not to do it.
Yeah.
And he showed you this is not a turkey. This is a turkey. And it was hilarious. It was the greatest thing. So I'd never seen that at an auction either. So it was kind of fun.
Pretty cool.
But yeah, it was a great time, great fun. They raised a lot of money. So and you know, it kind of plays into a little bit with Dave being here today. They asked one of the local guys that came to the banquet was a minister there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they asked him to give the prayer before the meal.
Yeah.
And he got up there and he talked about, he goes, you know, SCI, Safari Club International, I've always believed the C stood for conservation.
Mm.
All this money goes for conservation and everything else. And he goes, you know, and that plays right into my job, you know. And he read right out of Genesis there, you know, first couple chapters of Genesis where it talks about, you know, man's role in creation.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was fantastic.
That's
you know,
great.
To have that as part of the auction, you know. you know, especially for me, you know, I'm a man of faith and too. And so it was just special to see that put in into there. So that was pretty cool.
Very cool. And can you hit on real quick for people listening what SCI does in a kind of a nutshell? I'm sure they've seen the logo. I don't know if anybody knows what they do.
Wow. Catch me off guard there, Dave.
Yeah.
Safari Club International is the largest hunting group that has a voice in helping with conservation all around the world, not just in the United States, but all around the world. And right now, Safari Club International is the loudest, also the best funded, and the largest organization that is fighting for our hunting rights, fighting for conservation of game animals, and good conservation. You know, when I say good conservation, that also includes the management of these animals, which sometimes management gets lost in the politics of things. And they have realized Safari Club's really, really good at fighting through the politics, participating in that, knowing that that's a they have a lot of say in what happens. But let's keep it about the animal. Let's keep it about the conservation, about the management. And they've done a very, very good job about that. You know, for me, that's a wonderful thing for me to play part of, to be part of that. I believe in what their message is and what they're going. And, you know, in hunting right now, they were talking about how the percentage of people in the United States, they took it as the whole of the United States, not just Washington or Idaho, but the whole of the United States. From 40 years ago, you know, when I was in high school and all of those, how many people were buying fishing and hunting license, and then now. You know, 2 years ago when the last numbers came out, how many people are buying fishing and hunting license? And the number's going down. You know, our population is increasing, but our population that is actually out buying fishing licenses and hunting licenses is going down, the percentage-wise. And so how do we do that? And their big message for this year and probably, you know, years to come, but they're really pushing this year, is, you know, take a kid fishing, take a kid hunting, get them outdoors. And even if you're not, you know, going out to harvest an animal, take them out to take pictures. Take them out there to go see what's going on. You know, get them involved in nature so that they can see that. That's a great message. That is a fantastic message.
So. Yep, and there's a lot of other pillars in that message, right? There's a there's a faith-based, there's conservation, there's family orientation, right? There's a lot of things that we've gotten away from. And the biggest thing, there's two, right? It's busy and it's expense. Like I just saw one of the proposals last night is to double the size of the price of a Discover Pass, right?
Right.
To go park somewhere to recreate or put the boat in or whatever. And it's they want it to go to $65. And it's, I mean, it's $65, but you add your tags and your licenses and the gas and, you know, it does add up and it can certainly price somebody out. And so, you know, then you'll start looking at how many holsters you have to buy till you find the right one.
Right.
And, you know, just, going to a bow shop and can't get out of there for under $200. And so, there's a lot of things fighting against it. Then you add some cultural and some, I wouldn't call them anti-hunters, but, there's always going to be sort of the anti, but it's more of the don't even understand it. That's how important that is, right?
Right.
So where I live, a little more Microsoft-centric business. Everybody works 24 hours a day, right? Their phone goes off. They're expected to answer.
Wow.
You don't find people taking time to go put the boat in or, or anything. They just gotten away from those skills. So I look at it as, you know, I enjoy the outdoors. I really do enjoy the animals and all that. I also enjoy cooking for people and, say, for example, salmon or halibut, you know, things my neighbors maybe wouldn't go get.
Right.
Have them over. And what's that now? And you caught that? And then how do you prepare that? You know, so you could add deer, elk, whatever you want. Showing, you know, again, that community of food, right? The breaking bread and that kind of stuff together does something.
Right.
And in my neighborhood, I've got Russian and Ukrainian. It's interesting to eat and listen to them talk. And it's like, wow, this is eye-opening. What is really going on that I'm not seeing, both culturally, physically, you know. And so...
Well, the Discover Pass is a great one to use as an example because there are so many things that are playing into that. But years and years ago, when I was on Game Management Advisory Council mm-hmm. for Fish and Wildlife in the state, we talked about this, was people wanted viewing sites for wildlife. People wanted, mm-hmm. you know, they wanted to be able to get out there and see, you know, they want these habitat areas and different things. And so we need to, you know, but it seems that we're putting more pressure on the hook and bullet guys to fund those sites because they're the ones that are wanting to hunt them, wanting to use them the most. And mm-hmm. so I remember sitting in I was testifying in front of a legislative panel, one of the committees, and the guy that headed that committee was very, very strong on watchable wildlife, mm-hmm. okay, the whale watching and all of those things. And we proposed at that time that instead of putting all of the pressure on hook and bullet money for anything wildlife, watchable wildlife and all those, there needs to be a pass. Well, that got worked into the Discover Pass. Well, the Discover Pass was also put in place to find places for people to get access into public property, public lands, not only just for watchable wildlife, but other things. So now all of a sudden, everybody wants money out of the mm-hmm. Discover Pass.
Yeah.
And yet it's not really doing what we proposed to do with it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Guys that buy, you know, I just bought all my stuff, mm-hmm. you know, licenses and everything, because it became the end of March, first of April, mm-hmm. and everything rolls out and rolls in. And so I bought everything, and I got the little parking pass from Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's because they know I'm going to go out, and I'm going to hunt, and I'm going to fish, and I'm going to need access and all these other things. And then they make me go buy a Discover Pass.
Yeah.
And, well, wait a minute. You know, yep, why is my price going up on, you know, if I have a fishing license, why is my Discover Pass yeah. going up in prices? Because I paid for it over here also. And wow. so why is that not part of my?
Yeah, there are places where I got to put both yeah. on the dash because it's very
exactly.
ambiguous as to which one is required,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So, and then the biggest thing is I've got four cars. My daughter wants to go on a hike, so I put yeah. the license there, and I got the license on my truck. Right. Now I can't use that for my other two vehicles. You know, you can't just buy one for your family and then just swap it, right?
Right. And it can't be the same number.
Yeah, you know? It was like, you know, can I just use this in every vehicle? Or
well, they tried to fix it after the first year, you know, when
it was
one
per, yeah.
they gave mm-hmm. us two vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but if my wife and I both take both vehicles,
that's the issue.
That seems to happen a lot. Uh-huh. We take two vehicles to everything, it seems like.
How do you get all the equipment?
How yeah. do we?
I park and I'm like, where's the pass? It's in the other car.
It's in the other car. So can I put it up and say it's yeah. this car and the one parked next to me? But, you know, so, you know, it's like everything uh-huh. else. You can't legislate everything. And so you got to be careful. And those that are enforcing that pass is, you know, Dave and I, we witnessed it 2 years ago, a little bit of abuse on mm-hmm. writing tickets for the lack yeah. of a Discover Pass. And it was almost like, well, wait a minute. You want people to come to the state park or you don't want
yeah.
people to come to the state park?
The way I've seen the hiking trails near me, yeah, it's like you don't want me to recreate, do you?
Yeah.
So kind of I don't know. Yeah. Seems like it'd be an opportunity to explain it and just make sure you have one next time and instead. Yeah, it's yeah. like they like that ticket book.
Yeah,
don't they?
Exactly. And, you know,
and then you're never going to come back. So,
you know, and if you want people to use it more, you got to make it, you know, everybody that's in business except for the state, you know, realizes that you can overprice yourself
yeah,
on any
exactly.
item, or you can price it down and sell more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are you trying to accomplish? But the state just sees it as in, well, yeah. if we're not making enough money, we're just going to add 10 more dollars to it.
Yeah,
well,
they were $15, I'd buy four of them, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know,
and
so, make sure each car had one.
Yeah, so. And it would get more out there. But mm-hmm. on the other side of the coin, but everybody wants a piece of the pie.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as we made more money, GMAT got hit with a lot of those things. We were always working on fees and trying mm-hmm. to, how do we raise more money? How do we get more user groups in? And we would work on all these things and it would start getting more money. Well, then all of a sudden the legislature goes, well, we don't need to give you as much because yeah. you're now making more. Well, you just stayed the same.
Yes.
Yeah.
We learned how to make more money, but then the state just took more away mm-hmm. from us. So we just all stayed static. And it was like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Isn't that punishment for performance?
But yeah, exactly. You know,
yeah.
We're
yeah.
doing our job now. And so exactly now you're going to take money away from me. It's, mm-hmm. And the state doesn't realize that. And
yeah.
so many people don't legislators that are voting on things, and they could care less. They could care less about the Discover Pass or about those things. And so they're just cutting deals with those guys to say, okay, well, you could care less about what I'm doing over here in my area, so I'll vote for your thing, but you vote for my thing. Mm-hmm. Well, is that really covering the best? I'm not saying that it doesn't, but I'm just saying that's how politics work.
Yeah.
And so SCI does a really nice job of going through the noise, working through the noise, and making sure that the right things are being said to the right people so that we can educate them and get them to vote the right way.
That's good.
Doesn't always work, but it's the best we can do at this point.
But it's a voice, though.
It is a voice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, our running joke, you just picked up 600 chicks at the Spokane airport. How'd that go?
I even told my wife I was going to the airport to pick up chicks, I guess.
Well, you ought to talk about having a church leader to work with that invites you to go out to a city and go pick up chicks.
That's true. I did invite Dave to go with me to the airport.
Could be a short career if you're not careful.
It kind of made me wonder, what kind of church have I signed on before we're here?
So, but we did get there. I started learning the pattern for the last couple of years, and now all of a sudden USPS has decided to add another flight. So the chicks got there before I did, because I was watching the emails coming through when every time they'd be scanned.
Sure.
So I would know when to be at the airport. Well, I had another meeting planned that morning, so I went to it, and by the time I got out of that, it was noon. And then I checked my emails to see, okay, have they got on the flight from Minneapolis yet? And what do you mean they're already there? They got there at 9:30.
Wow.
So, I just got to be more watching this stuff. But anyway, it was great. Get up there, pick up the chicks, and then Jackie always, we have cell phones now, so we check in all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm leaving Spokane. You need anything before I pull out of Airway Heights? And she goes, oh, man. She goes, I thought you were only getting 600. I says, I did only get 600. She goes, wow, these 600 are noisy.
Uh-oh.
Because she could hear them over the speaker in the pickup. I was doing hands-free, So, she could hear them out in the background. And
That's funny. But, yeah. And then what's the logistics of getting them up to your pen sites and stuff? Like, do they need to be fed and watered? Are they good for the whole trip?
No. From the time the chick's born, they will sex it, separate them, put them in boxes, and then put them on trucks, and then get them to the airport, and then they fly to Spokane. I pick them up, and then they come to, and then I take them into two chicks can live for about 2 days. Without food and water, from what comes out of the shell,
amazing.
Their deal. But you, by that time, you better have everything in place for them to eat and drink after 2 days. I've seen guys stretch it to three and different things. For me to be successful, I've just learned I cannot allow them to put it on the mail truck. I have to get it when it gets off the airplane.
Yeah, I remember you saying that a while ago.
Because it starts getting cold and different things, And so when I pick up the bird, I turn up the heat in my pickup. So, instead of,
So they're in the cab in boxes?
They're in the cab in boxes.
I was assuming huge crate in the back of the pickup.
No. Okay. The boxes are probably, I'm guessing, 18 inches square. Okay. They come in and then they separate the box into four sections so the birds can't all pile to one side or not. And then they put so many in each deal. I think the boxes carry somewhere between 120 and 140. Depending on how many you order. The other day I picked up four full boxes and one half box, and the half box was smaller. It was a smaller box. I picked those up. So when I start the in the pickup, I'll turn the heat up to anywhere between 75 and 80, depending on how cold it is outside and everything, which – if you haven't done that, try that for a while. Just try to drive for an hour edit at 80, okay? And you're like, okay, I could go to sleep any minute now.
Wow. Can you change out your dome light to an infrared or something?
It's so,
like a hamburger driving down the road.
And you'll notice right away. The chicks, you can hear them when they're bringing them out on the cart and you're outside and you're loading them. And there's been some days it's been snowing, raining, cold, freezing when I'm picking them up. And so as soon as you pull them out that door, it just goes silent in the box. And you're putting them in this pickup. And by the time I get past the airport, back out on Highway 2, headed for home, the chicks, you'll start hearing them. They're warming up. They're feeling good. They're starting to talk again.
Okay.
And that'll keep you awake.
Well, for a while. You got the, you know, and they love when Jackie talks. Oh. So I get her on the phone or something, or anybody. I'll get somebody on the phone. Whenever they're talking, the chicks will quiet down. As soon as that person quits talking and I start quiet, they just ramp right back up. And the person on the phone can tell this. It's an interesting deal. But I keep the pickup warm. I have my brooders running 24 hours ahead of time.
You not only
got to warm up the ambient air, you got to warm up the walls, you got to warm up the floor, you got to warm up every stick, everything in there has to be back up. And I try to keep everything at 100. I think the optimum is like 102 or something like that. I try to just make sure that the thermometer, when I look at it, it's right around 100, and that seems to work. The brooders, I bring the brooders down. I put rings out so it holds the heat in on the floor closer for the chicks. But you can only keep rings in there for, I don't know, 10, 12 days because the chicks will get their flight feathers and they'll start flying out of the rings. And so then we take the rings out, and then they have the whole room to themselves running around and things. But we'll keep that room at 100 for at least 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then we start turning it down to where we're coming down a couple of degrees, you know. And so by the time you'll
climatize them then, basically.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And then so by the time we get to that third week, I'm down to about 90, 95 on the brooders, keeping the room that way. But at the third week, I open the doors, and so they can go out into a cage. That's still protected, so they're not just right out in the rain or right out in snow or whatever the weather is, but they can go outside. And so, and you'll see it. They'll come in and when it's cold, and they'll go out and they'll start checking out the sun, and we're still bringing the temperature down. And so by the time you get to about 5-6 weeks, the temperature's, I've turned the brooders off and the chicks just come and go. So the room's warmer, out of the wind, out of the weather. Outside is more in the weather. And, you know, I keep mine in a pen just because I can. But most of the time, like some of these surrogators that people are trying to raise birds or, you know, propagate more birds in their area, those things, they're turning them loose at 5-6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
They're opening it up so they can come back, get food for another week or two. But it's basically they're free to go. And that then they'll grow and they'll be a little bit more wild. Me, they're going to stay in a pen until I catch them to turn them loose for a hunter. So they're going to be in my pens from I start hunting them. I want all of my birds 22 weeks old before I catch it and start turning it loose for a hunter. Okay. That makes it's a big bird. It's a mature bird. Some of the guys are turning them loose. I've heard guys as early as 18 weeks. I don't think the roosters don't have their full color by then.
I was
going to
say they don't have their color probably.
And they're a little smaller. You know, just that last 4 weeks, you'll see a huge difference in just in the color or the ring of their neck or whatever.
Wow.
So I'm turning them loose about that time. So it's kind of a process. But and most of the birds, you know, I'll get another set of chicks here in 2 weeks. And then another set in 2 weeks.
So 2 week offset then.
And I just kind of have an offset because I don't need to feed all the birds because my season goes from, you know, the last week in September all the way through April. Well, if to have a bird 22 weeks old in March, I don't need to buy it now.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't need to feed it for that extra 2-3 months.
Yeah.
So I'll buy chicks all the way up until July. The last chicks I'll take are in July, and that usually gets them all my birds. They're going to be 22 weeks old by Christmas.
Very cool.
So anything after that is now going to be 24, 48, or 28, 32.
Okay.
So.
And then since you have a preserve, it's year-round.
I have one preserve that is licensed year-round. For the first 2 years, I tried to keep a couple hundred there for guys in the summer, and I'd sold like 20. So I don't try to keep them.
Yeah.
I have the shooting preserve if somebody wanted to come out and train some dogs or doing, but there's rules in the state of Washington that they can do that. They don't need the shooting preserve.
Yeah.
So I don't keep anything. It's more, especially since bird flu has made disease and those kind of things really prevalent for us bird growers. So even before that, I was a little bit, biosecurity was a little careful, you know, who came in and went out of the pens. Now it's no. If you raise birds at home or you raise birds, you know, do what I do somewhere else, no, you don't come on my place. I don't go on your place. We don't need to be swapping that kind of stuff and staying away.
Let's step out for a quick commercial. And
sure.
Then we'll
sounds good.
Come back and introduce Pastor Dave.
All right.
The Snoqualmie Inn by Hotel America is the perfect location to stay at when visiting the Snoqualmie Valley. With 99 guest rooms, the inn can accommodate travel, sports teams, and seminars in addition to valley visitors. Enjoy the breakfast buffet, fitness center, and indoor pool before starting your activities. Coaches and parents alike will enjoy the spacious meeting rooms and lounging areas with food and coffee retailers, all within steps of the front door. Use promo code SNOWPOD for 12% off. Teams contact Lori Hay for reservations and discounts. Make the Snoqualmie Inn part of your stay. And don't forget to use the promo code SNOWPOD. That's S-N-O-P-O-D in all caps.
All right, welcome back to the HRO Adventure Podcast. Rusty, why don't you introduce our special guest, Pastor Dave?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, Dave, thanks for coming here today. I really appreciate you taking the invitation and coming up. You were on the list of special guests. You can take special however you want.
Well, I rode a bus that was special when I was a kid, so, you know.
Okay.
I appreciate being here. Thank you.
And Dave came to us. I'm going to let him introduce himself, tell him about his background and everything else. But Dave and I actually worked together here at the church. So I've known Dave since he's moved up here. Mm-hmm. I had some say in him moving up here. I was one of the voices that had to say yes or got to say yes in this case.
And so, I appreciate it.
In the interview process with Dave, I'll tell a quick story here before he gets going. In the interview process, of course, you always get references. Mm-hmm. And one of the references Dave gave, I called the fella and I'm sitting there talking to him and everything else. And of course, you know, all things with me, every conversation ends with hunting somehow. So next thing you know, I'm trying to go, oh, you got property in Kansas? I'd love to come back there and hunt whitetails. Well, you just come back anytime, Rusty. We'll just take you on. And he goes, well, do you do a lot of hunting in Washington? I said, well, yeah, I do a lot of hunting in Washington. So I'm telling him, and then pretty soon it was Hidden Ranch Outfitters and everything else. And he goes, does Dave know you have an outfitter business? I said, Dave doesn't know that yet, but I have a feeling he's going to know pretty quick. He goes, as soon as I get off the phone.
Yep.
So anyway, there you go, Dave.
I love Jim calling me and said, you're dumping our church for a hunting trip? And I said, what are you talking about?
Never-ending hunting trip.
And Jim was a good friend. You know, I grew up wanting to be a preacher. It was my life.
Yeah.
You know, at like 5 year old, I made mom comb my hair like the preacher, which meant kindergarten, I had a comb over. And, you know, it was a part of my world. And I joked, growing up in Wyoming, I joked with people. I said, I'll go anywhere in the world God wants me to go, except Kansas. And I end up spending 30 years in Kansas, which tells me God has a sense of humor.
He does.
And, now I keep saying, you know, I don't want to go to Hawaii or Alaska. Yeah. Wow, I would hate that. But I think reverse psychology doesn't work well. And I love one of the first questions when I was interviewing with Rusty and another guy up here. They said, you do know this is the Pacific Northwest, right? It's like nowhere near Kansas. And I said, yeah, if I go any further, I'm going to have to be speaking French or something. Yeah. So been up here about 4 years. The first weekend we came up, spent time with Rusty, with some of the other people in the church, spent the weekend with the church, and as Teresa and I were packing up to go back home, we both kind of agreed that this feels more like home.
Wow.
It feels like we're leaving home instead of going home. It's just, you know, I love the fact that this is the diversity in the, you know, place up here. 30 minutes from where we live, you can go into any ecosystem you want, be in the prairies, be in the coulees, be in the mountains, be at the river. And loving to hunt and fish like I do and love being out, you know, where we are, it is, you know, I'm almost convinced that God has to live up here and he probably goes to heaven to do paperwork. it's just a stunning area to be. you know, and I love the people. It's a, you know, a good, you know, what do we call a salt of the earth kind of people. Mm-hmm. What you see is what you get. And of course, farmland in Kansas and farmland here is kind of the same. We left down there and came up here, and there's nothing but white pickups and
yep.
people with cowboy hats. I'm going there.
Definitely a sale on white pickup trucks.
Yeah,
right there.
1,700 mile trip, and I'm back in, yeah. in the same place I was. You know.
That's funny.
But it has been great. We love being up here. Love you know, being able to talk. Love being able to hunt and fish with Rusty. It's a lot of fun. Just have a really good time. So, but I don't see how people that don't do outdoors, how do they build relationships? You know,
I don't know that they do.
Because
yeah,
you know,
I
the biggest
that's part of the problem, right?
Yeah. The biggest thing for me is not necessarily the taking of an animal or fishing. It's what happens between. You know, the hunting camp is the biggest, you know, biggest joy. Just sitting around with guys and telling stories we've heard and being able to realize in your mind that that deer wasn't quite that big the first year that you took it, but 3 years from now he's grown quite a bit since his death. You know, so it is good. I just love being up here. You know, I love the way the people have accepted us, and we get to work with people and just love what's going on.
Well, you grew up with your brother and your dad taking you going hunting together as a family.
Yeah, we hunted a lot. In fact, my mom actually became one of the better shots I'd ever been around because she realized with two sons and a husband that hunted, if she wanted to see us from September to January, she better learn how to hunt. And she got good. I also got good at cleaning animals because Dad and Rich would hunt together. I'd go with Mom, and so I have to clean Mom's animal. But that's all right. That's all right.
There you go.
That was fun. It became a family tradition. You just you go hang together.
Yeah, he grew up in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of fishing and hunting in Wyoming. That the rest of us have to draw a tag to go see.
Yeah.
So
it was
what
fun.
What city in Wyoming? Or
in Cheyenne.
Cheyenne, okay. So, yep. Neat place.
It was a lot of fun, and moved from there to go to school in Lubbock, Texas, which is nothing like Wyoming.
I'm super familiar with Lubbock, Texas.
Oh
yeah.
Even the trees have enough sense not to live out there. In fact, I ran into a guy from the National Forest Service and said, "Wow, you're doing a really bad job." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, there's not a tree within 500 miles." So I was not as good at building relationships back in those days.
I was stationed in Del Rio for couple of years.
Sorry.
Those are places you land, and the locals go, "Why did you come here? We're trying to get out of here."
What were you thinking?
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your service, but and sacrifice.
sacrifice, I think, is more like it. I remember taking my poor Toyota Celica. The water pump died, you know, because it was 114 every day for a year. And I remember the local place, all they sold was pickup trucks. And they were like, we reckon we could work on that car, but we don't work on cars. And I thought, yeah, if we can get a water pump in that, that'd be great. But yeah, it was almost the edge of the earth when I was there. So it's just like, holy cow. And then we flew all over that area. Just an interesting location. So I do know Lubbock, too.
Yeah, I got in trouble with the church there. I was leading music and directing music for them, and we were going to sing "The Old Rugged Cross." And I said, "Now this starts with the phrase 'on a hill far away.' For those of you that grew up here, a hill is where the ground goes up." I got some really bad looks.
Yeah, trying to do navigation, and there's nothing. There's no points to use. Every river on my map that we used as a crossing point was a perennial river and was dried up. So, you know, I don't remember what we did, 300 feet, 300 knots, and the river's not here. The stuff that was on the map, there's nothing to navigate off down here. So it was very unique.
And I loved the people, had great people there.
Yeah,
it was such a really welcome. It's rural America, farmland, so it's, you know, good people, good people to be around and loved it, but it just wasn't my place. In fact, one of my teachers in seminary said, you're in the middle of the best fishing and hunting in the world. And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, 500 miles any direction from here, there is good fishing.
Local guys tried to take me bass fishing, you know, in the reservoir. And I'm thinking, I've done tuna in the, out in the ocean and lots of salmon in Puget Sound and crabbing. I just can't get excited about this little reservoir that was man-made, and there's the truck that just dumped the fish driving out as we show up. And I thought, it's fishing, but this isn't what I think I want to do. So, yes. Yeah, very unique.
Very unique. That's what I love about being up here. God's just done some show-off work up here, you know, this, you know, the conservation piece of the SCI, you know, there's what you get to see up here is just so stunning. Yeah. You get to see the rock formations, and you look at it and go, wow, that is just beyond understanding.
Yeah.
You know, just if you don't want to get out into the middle of the wilderness out here, I don't know what you do. I mean, I don't see how you could do that.
You know? Well, there's a grounding, I think, that happens when you get out in the woods too, right?
Yeah.
And off into the beaten path and
yeah.
Just reconnect. That's what I like about the hunting blind, right? You jump in that thing and the woods go quiet again and it goes back to whatever it was doing and you you get to be an observer, right? Versus a tree stand or walking around. And people that I've taken have commented on that. You know, you pop up the blind and, I mean, the birds are going crazy, squirrels are going crazy, right? Mm-hmm. About 5 minutes, the woods go back to whatever the woods were doing, and it's kind of neat to just be a bystander. That is my favorite part of it. That's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dave, when he first got here, you know, it was right at the beginning of the summer, and so I was in the middle of all my scouting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Dave and I would talk on the phone as he was getting to know everybody and getting to know things, and we'd be talking on the phone and everything. And he goes, "Well, where are you at?" And I said, "Well, I'm just sitting in my pickup out watching deer." Well, why are we talking on the phone?
So
Dave goes, "Tell me what time you're going out tomorrow. I'll just come up, get in the pickup, and we can talk face to face while we're out looking at deer." And it's like, sounds good to me.
Great idea.
Windshield time.
So we did. We did a lot of windshield time and a lot of times. And we had some good times. Those are the good talks. Those are the ones that, you know, you say whatever's on your mind. Nobody else is listening. It's where you got. So that's, you know, all of a sudden, I guess the pickup turns into a confessional because this is the two of you stuck in there.
That's true.
So, you know.
What happens in the pickup stays,
In the pickup, exactly.
Campfire has an effect too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And that's the relationship part of hunting, the camaraderie and all that, the family part. You know, families that hunt together, you know, it used to be this T-shirt was family that hunts together, stays together kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And those are the best friends, best buddies. Yeah. You know, last podcast we had Cousin Rick on, and that's how Rick and I spent our young adulthood. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Some people said we were still in adolescence because they knew how we acted. But
well, you're never too old to have a happy childhood.
There you go.
That's my brother's big statement. In fact, we went out with Rusty for what may well be the last time me and my brother and my dad were able to hunt together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, Dad's health is getting to where he's not able to get around as much, and Rusty graciously invited us out and got to go spend the day and watch me take an expert shot.
Wow.
This deer was a very rare thing. I don't know if you can actually break all four legs of a deer in two shots, but, you know, it's possible.
Wow.
And get the animal on the ground. So, it was not my best shooting, but, you know.
Well, it was the audience and the pressure.
It is.
We're going to blame it all on them.
A little bit of pressure.
Blame it on your brother. That's what brothers are for.
There you go. That was his fault.
It was his fault.
He moved the pickup.
Moved the pickup. There you go.
So, but yeah, being able to have, your brother and your dad with you, those are special times. You know, I don't take it for granted anymore.
Yeah.
The time I get with my dad and with my brothers. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen as much as it used to. And so you start realizing just how short those times are and being able to do that. And I remember when we were trying to set that deer up to take some pictures.
Yeah.
You know, your brother was like, "You're going to take pictures of Dave?" We take pictures of all the deer that the guys shoot and everything else. And I says, "And by the way, Rich, you get to be in the picture. Why would I want to be in the picture with Dave?" And so, you know, I found out that his brother has a very dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
Sometimes
I already picked up on that.
Are we joking or are we serious?
True.
And he is quick-witted.
Very much.
I had trouble keeping up sometimes. It was so good. But we had a that was just fun. I don't know if we can blame it on anybody or whatever, but that's probably the longest hunt.
That's true.
That you and I have ever been on. Well, when we went elk hunting, that was a 2-day adventure.
Yeah, that was fun.
But it was fun. But yeah, as far as harvesting something, that was the longest hunt we ever went on. The rest of them, Dave comes along and we try to plan, you know, not to see anything at first so we can call it hunting and not harvesting, killing. But we stumble into something every time. So, yeah.
That's what's fun. Somebody knows the area. When I first moved up here and we're driving out, Teresa and I rented a car in Spokane, and we are driving up to Rusty's place. We're going to stay with him for the first night. And Teresa says, he hunts deer out here? All this sagebrush? Where are the deer? And we're like, good grief. They're like, they got to keep them in a box somewhere or something. I don't know. And then when I think the next morning we went out and we started seeing the deer all over and go, wow, they are out here. I was used to, you know, the whitetails and the, you know, out in, you know, Kansas, Missouri, mm-hmm. you know, lots of cover, lots of deep timber mm-hmm. they're in. Out here, you know, what are they going to be in? But they can disappear like nobody's business.
They vanish. You know,
I'm standing there looking, going, it took 2 steps, it's gone. They're magic.
They're magic.
Impressive.
Yeah, we've had some good times. I know Teresa went with us a couple times. Just, you guys saw how many deer? No, you didn't see that.
Of course, so. Then she gets to arguing up with you over how many points are on that deer. Like, no, it's just 6. It's 4. That's 5.
Well, and then the first deer that Dave actually harvested when he was here, I think we'd hunted all of maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I realized Dave needs to hunt more than that. And so from now on, we take at least a couple hours now before I take him where I know there are no deer. And we hunt for
hunt a little while.
We hunt a little while before, because Dave wants the most out of it. So,
So everybody does, right?
On his first one, it was like, okay, I'm going to shoot it. And then it's going to run off, and we're going to go look for it for about 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then when we find it again, I'll shoot it again, and then we can clean it and take it home.
There you go.
So, yeah.
And that was the gun.
Well, that's what we told the other guy that was with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's funny.
And when we shot that deer the first time, we went over, and Dave was like, it's not laying here. Nope, it's not. So where did it go? I don't know.
That is one of the fun things about about missing. But we've never left a deer.
Nope.
We found everything we've gone after. Everything he got injured got. You know, and that's a part of being a responsible hunter. You don't just shoot and
taking those ethical shots, right?
You take the shot that you know you can hit, and if you do miss it, you go find it. If there's blood, you chase it. You make sure. And
The last one you shot, that one was, we tried to shoot him and he kind of got, it had to be quick and he kind of got out on us. And so then we kind of moved around to where we thought he was going, and then we saw him where he was headed. And then he kind of got out of our sight and he was still on his feet. So we had to move around. It was kind of a hunting chess game with him.
Yeah.
He knew we were watching him, and he knew we were there. He was watching us the whole time. And then he disappeared in a spot where he can't disappear. Okay, there's no wormhole here for him to step into and leave. He's here somewhere. And I spotted him. All I could see was his face. I couldn't see horns or anything. I could just see his face. So I knew. And Dave couldn't see him, and I said, you're just going to have to trust me on this one, because I don't know how to explain it any better. That 100 acres of sagebrush down there, he's
the
right
twig.
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we moved down, and that deer watched us drive all the way down there. Mm-hmm. He watched us get out of the truck. He parked the truck. He watched us. We didn't get out of his sight until we left the truck, and we had to walk a couple hundred yards. He was within shooting distance of the truck, but he was laying down. He thought he was hid. And Dave still hadn't seen him, and we got around on him. And we were, I want to say, 20 yards, and we couldn't see him. And this is with a rifle. We're 20 yards from him, and Dave's Dave's still going on faith. So there you go. Yes. Only a preacher would be following along there, because he's like, I could see there was doubt coming up, you know, that I don't think Rusty saw him. I don't think he's here. Yeah. And I'm just like going, we're just going to have to wait him out, Dave, because we get any closer, we're going to be down in the sagebrush and we'll never get a shot.
I was going to say, yeah, you'll be on his level and it won't work well
enough. We have to stay on this little rock kraut cropping we were on, or we're not going to get a shot at him. And he let us stand there for 20 minutes. I mean, he tortured us. And then he got up and he ran, and Dave didn't have anything but a white patch zigzagging through the sagebrush until about 200 yards, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
And then he stood broadside and went, okay, I don't think you can shoot this far. He kind of knew Dave at that point. So, but Dave, that finished that one. That was a one shot done
deal.
We
dropped that.
So, yeah. That
changed
was
his mind.
We proved him wrong.
Yeah.
We have lots of gear-oriented people that like to know about types of rifles and rounds. So what kind of stuff do you like to hunt with?
Whatever I can get.
Like, yeah.
I'd left a lot of guns down in Oklahoma because when we moved up here, we moved into a fifth-wheel trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of room to store. So I'm shooting a 270 Winchester up here.
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
So, nice little gun. Yep. Yeah, I did a lot with a 243 down in Missouri. But longest shot hunting in Missouri and Kansas was maybe 110 yards, and usually under 75, because we had some property in Missouri we hunted on. It was just, you know, thicket area, and so you're never going to have a long shot there.
A good old 270, it's a very historic.
Oh, yeah.
Historic rifle. That's one of my favorites. So.
Yeah.
I like it.
That caliber bullet is still probably one of the most best, you know, coefficients.
It just
the
flies.
7PRC is the new Vogue one. And I mean, that bullet is just the one, the 6.5 PRC. They're all right in there.
Yeah.
Everybody goes to that for distance, for just the coefficients, for everything. So, can't go wrong with the 270.
It works. And I would love to say I got it because I was a big fan of it, but actually I went up to go get a 308 years ago, and the cost between the two guns was big, and I was not really, you know, making that much money at that time, and thought, okay, I'm going to drop this. I'll go to the 270, and I'm glad I did. It's been a good gun.
Yeah. Perfect for here, too.
So. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a perfect one.
Well, you talked about some of like God's creations and stuff when you moved here and whatnot. So we have a little bit of space in here to talk about your thoughts on God's creations and whatnot.
Oh, wow. I love being able to see what God is. You know, in the Psalms it talks about, you know, when I look up at the heavens, I see your glory. I see what you've done. And, you know, that happens, you know, so much. Every morning you get to, you know, God basically just shows off and goes, hey, look at this. I bet you don't have a crayon like this in your box.
Yeah,
you know,
just driving to work or the store, right?
Yeah. And it's stunning out there. And to think that with just a thought and just a word, he can create stuff that we can't even explain. That we get a theory and we say, well, this is how this might have worked. And then this one rock shows up and goes, well, maybe that theory doesn't work.
Throws a wrench into it, yeah.
And so we... You know, it's just amazing to see so many intentional things that I think God had to be saying, okay, let's see how they explain this one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have some fun.
Yeah, like you said, definitely has a sense of humor, right?
Yeah. But when you back off and just take a step back and go, if there's a God that did this, when you look at it, he is a creative God. Mm-hmm. He is a beautiful God. He didn't have to create so many birds in nature, but he did. One of my favorite verses, in fact, when Jesus is talking in the Sermon on the Mount, he talks about, you know, are you not worth, you know, two sparrows are sold for a penny in the marketplace, and you're worth more than them, and yet not one of those sparrows falls to the ground without the Father.
Mm-hmm.
That God even knows when the birds hit the ground and die, and that's got to be a lot every day, but he still has a great concern for the people, and he put us here to take care of the animals.
Yeah.
You know, that's the Genesis 1-2 thing, you know, that...
Yeah, you know, we're the caretaker.
Yeah, to be careful of this. And, you know, that's why I think it's super important for especially hunters and fishermen and outdoorsmen to just, you know, take care of what you see out there. Mm-hmm. I hate when I go hiking around a lake to go fish to a spot, and I find, a bunch of cans and trash and that left. I think this is a bad, especially when we're on private land. You know, when I'm driving around up there and we're scouting stuff and I see something just thrown out, that's just really poor stewardship,
What well, and there's a cause and effect, right? That happens on private. Private gets closed. You lose access. So somebody was offering to let you come out there, and you made a big enough mess or some sort of danger, like with fire dangers and whatnot, to where they go, I can't let other people come out here. Right. And so we're seeing the numbers decline, and we're seeing the access decline, and it's pretty much our fault, isn't it?
So. Especially the big timber companies have to deal with that so much. The bigger the landowner, the bigger they have to deal with it. Yep. So.
Bigger the problems.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hmm. Well, thanks for that. That's, I'm in a very unique and blessed profession where I get to see, we call it the God's eye view, 40, 50,000 feet sometimes, and get to see, the San Andreas Fault, all the mountain ranges. I mean, I get to see them, I think, in a perspective most people never see them at, right? And it's, you can literally see the earth moving and the plates moving, and this is why this is happening. And it's just such a, I think if more people got that view, things would be different, because it's very unique, whether it's oceans, rivers, flying over the mountains, flying into the mountains, the different geography just to go coast to coast is, got the best seat in the house looking out the window. Yeah, so.
Absolutely. Well, we flew a lot of times. We have kids in Oklahoma City, Kansas City, New York, so we fly a lot. And recently I was able to speak in Lubbock at the School of Preaching I graduated from. And instead of flying down, we decided to go drive. And we'd flown over that area, from Washington to Oklahoma City a lot. And a lot of that's a similar area, similar to our flight. And it was amazing to see the beauty from that height. And then when we went this last time, we drove down. And you get to see it, from the bottom up. And, I just kept wanting to stop all the time and go, look at that. And, you actually have to be in Lubbock, tomorrow. So keep moving. I still tell people, up here that I feel like I live in a postcard.
Yeah, we really do, don't we?
It's just, around every corner. I'm surprised that we don't have more traffic accidents. People just pulling over to take pictures. Look at that.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Look at that. Yeah. It's just, it's gorgeous. In fact, first time we left Rusty's house and started to come down through, down by Dry Falls and all of that. We got to one spot and I said, hey, stop here and let me get some pictures. And he said, no, wait a minute. It'll be better in just a minute. We'll go down. And, and he was right. He lived up here.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times I've taken pictures there at Dry Falls. And we do our Easter sunrise service there, which is so much fun.
What a great spot for it.
Just, singing over top of that cliff is just unbelievable.
I was just thinking, amazing. I've seen all the different terrain, but I've seen it sunrise, sunset at night, right? So, I mean, the Mount Rainier looks different at different times of the day, right? There's just unique features that you don't see every time you look at it. And I've got thousands and thousands of pictures of this stuff, and it just doesn't do it justice when I come home and show everybody,
This 2D picture is not cutting it.
But that was, I wasn't a desk cubicle guy, and it's the perfect setup for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, hey, did you get your CVA out and shoot it yet or not?
No, and as we were preparing for the show and that came up, I went, I really need to get that out and shoot it. And we've talked about that the last couple of shows, that we need to practice with those things. And,
yeah, and you get your range set up is what we need to do.
I know,
right?
And and I didn't put in for a multi-season tag, and I didn't, so I didn't get one. Mm-hmm. I hope that's not a shock to anybody that I didn't get one. But
well, I also did not get one for the same reason.
So I haven't declared a tag yet.
Okay.
And I'm actually waiting for to see the rules come out to see what tags are available, to see whether I'm going to do it. But I really need to shoot the CVA to see if I'm going to be able to shoot this muzzleloader and do what I want to do with it. So I need to, I need to get that out.
Okay.
And that's a great idea, Dave. Well, why don't, when I get that out, I'm going to, I'm going to take the new mics and take the video and videotape what I'm doing. I'll cut out all the embarrassing parts. And then we'll put that out and I'll have a review on that CVA, you know, perfect, from the time I bought it all the way through and to how I like it and what's going to happen with it. So be watching for that on the YouTube channel. And then I'll talk about it on here too. I'll introduce it once I get that out. The other one is I'm getting those.
Your steel targets.
Steel targets are coming in this week. So hopefully we'll get those out. Maybe we'll do some practicing with the CVA on the new steel targets. Okay. Get those out. I want to show everybody those. Those are the guy does a very good job and are kind of unique. There's a lot of people making steel targets now, but I'd like to throw Nate a little bit of love on that, because after seeing them all, those are the ones I chose and why I chose them.
And well, what makes them unique?
Built
right
AR-500,
I'm guessing, right, or something like that?
They are AR-500. He's an engineer and does private contracting for some of the big ag companies.
Oh, okay.
And so that's how he's moving around a lot. But he's a hunting and fishing crazy guy, and his whole family's that way. He lives down in Central Oregon. But being an engineer, everything's precise.
Over-engineered?
Well, yeah, for a guy like me that just cuts it out and takes it out there and shoots at it, you know. And I was watching a YouTube last night, and the guy was just hanging 8-inch gongs on a T-post, yeah, on a chain. You know, he didn't make it out and all this other stuff. It was just T-post in the ground with this thing hanging on it. You know, he's hitting the T-post every time he shoots. So it's kind of like it would flip around. And I'm going, well, you know, if you put two chains and two T-posts. But anyway, but that's, you know, that's redneck for you.
Yeah.
But Nate does a really good job, Boulder Creek Manufacturing, and so I'm going to take some pictures of it. He cuts out – one of the things that he does differently is he cuts out the vital area.
That
and
is cool.
Then he puts a swinging on a with a pretty good size spring. Mm-hmm. It makes it a swinging plate. So if you shoot into the vitals, you hit that plate, and that plate will swing and come back. So
gotcha.
You get that visual on it as well, that you will be able to see it. And then he paints it orange, and so it's a good target for you to pick out while you're looking at it.
Train your eye for
sure. Yeah, train your eye. So you're getting the – and he can make these as much as life-size as possible.
Yeah.
It's quite a deal. And then the second target I think I've mentioned on the podcast before is it's an MOA target. Mm-hmm. It's square. He's made it to a certain MOA so that when you look at it at long distances – it will show you in your scope how many MOAs that is.
The perspective is still the same.
Right. You know? And then he's done the swinging plate in the center. Mm-hmm. And I want to say it was like one MOA at 1,000 yards is the deal. But
we'll have to test that.
Yeah, we will have to test that. Yeah, Dad's already waiting for it. But with the new hardware he's got, they're not letting him shoot for another month or two. So I'm just going to let him watch. We'll see how well that goes over.
Yeah, good luck on that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we're not kidding anybody. He's probably shooting at it right now.
Yeah,
while we're here.
Maybe I won't tell him where it is.
I was going to say, you have to lock it down, like hide the bullets kind of thing.
So, yeah, but those will be two things that I want to review.
Well, good, and we'll have some good reviews and some good YouTube stuff then for people that are interested in.
What about you? Did you do any shooting with your new bow or anything?
I've done a lot of shooting, just coordination and whatnot to try to get out. Maybe tomorrow I'll get out.
But, so the new bow is working out?
Well, it's an old bow that's been remodified.
So
it's experimental. may or may not be a good thing.
That's an aviation term.
Yeah.
Did you write experimental on the side of it?
Yeah,
too?
I was going to say, you know, what I know about wings and winglets and fins is probably dangerous. So take that to a shop. They probably won't even touch it now. But we've updated the strings. It shoots around, 310, I think, and it's shooting a lot faster than that right now. And,
nice.
Playing with some fletching and some arrows and trying to find that balance of speed and kinetic energy, right? So target guys, and for a long time we all went for speed, and I've been able to get them to tumble, which is not, you know, you got to back it off. It's going too fast.
Yeah.
And so now I'm making them heavier to try to, I want more kinetic energy when they hit rather than just like a pass-through.
Gotcha.
I want them to have some punch. And so now I've slowed them back down and made them heavier.
Made them heavier.
And now they, you know, it's a thwack when they hit the target, right? So,
right.
So yeah, so we're pretty well dialed in on those for turkey, and we'll go out probably in the next few days and start chasing some. But, you know, with my unique schedule, when I'm home, everybody else is working. So it might be a solo trip. I don't know, but we'll see. And I've got you know, kids wrapping up school stuff and all that, you know, as we get close to the end. So trying to be at everything that they're doing to try to see as many things as they can, because they miss so many, right?
Absolutely.
Traveling. So.
Right.
So, yeah. But
we'll take a little break.
But, yeah, let's take a break. We'll run another commercial.
Absolutely.
And then we'll come back and we'll wrap it up with your calendar.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds good.
The Snoqualmie Inn by Hotel America is the perfect location to stay at when visiting the Snoqualmie Valley. With 99 guest rooms, the inn can accommodate travel, sports teams, and seminars in addition to valley visitors. Enjoy the breakfast buffet, fitness center, and indoor pool before starting your activities. Coaches and parents alike will enjoy the spacious meeting rooms and lounging areas with food and coffee retailers, all within steps of the front door. Use promo code SNOWPOD for 12% off. Teams contact Lori Hay for reservations and discounts. Make the Snoqualmie Inn part of your stay. And don't forget to use the promo code SNOWPOD. That's S-N-O-P-O-D in all caps.
All right, well, welcome back to the HRO Adventures Podcast. Rusty, it's time to go through your calendar as we get ready to wrap up our show.
Oh, nice, nice. Well, my calendar, I've already kind of started into it. Spring has sprung. Grass is growing. Weeds are growing. So we're mowing lawns. We're trying up at the cabins. And then, of course, the life of an outfitter is never buy a new sprinkler for the cabins before you buy a new sprinkler for your wife, for the house. So,
wise advice.
The first couple of years, I learned that all the hard way. I was buying new hoses, new sprinklers, and then she's going, why is there nicer stuff up here at the cabins than there are at my house? So then I realized, buy all new for Jackie, move her old stuff up to the cabins.
There you go.
He can be taught.
I wish I would learn faster, though.
Oh, don't I? No, we all. Our wives really wish we could.
Yeah, I think so. Well, now we know what they pray for. Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Yeah, so... So I've been mowing lawns, and I've got to get the sprayer up and moving, and get some of the weeds killed before they get too much bigger, and we'll take care of that. Of course, the chicks, the first set of chicks are in. We're getting things ready in the brooder house for the next set that's coming here in a couple weeks. And then we got to go in there and rototill all the pens up, because they just get nasty when you have 1,000 birds in them. For a couple of months, you know, it's you need to turn everything, let it compost in the ground, and you got to grow something. Yeah. You got to plant something in there that's going to grow just to keep that organic matter going.
I didn't know that.
And that's back to your biosecurity. You know, trying to keep things as clean as possible. So you clean the pens out, you water the pens, get stuff growing, letting it do nature's thing. Nature will take care of itself if we will just help it along. So you know, that's an old farmer saying, I think, or at least what my grandpa taught me. So, you know, try to keep that going. And those pins, I can't move. So I've got to take care of them where they sit and how they sit. So, and then a lot of pin maintenance. The gates that got hit, ran over, dropped a box in, whatever, and I've just patched it up with a couple zip ties and some pit tape. You know, that I've had to patch four times in the last 6 months. So just, you know, now it's time to go in there and fix it all and everything else. The cables that I suspend all my nets, so all my cables need to be stretched this year.
Yeah, because you do have a raptor issue that way.
I do. So we'll
protect them from above here.
I got a neighbor that's got a bucket truck, so he can get us up 20 feet, and we can tighten up cables and get our nets back up to a certain level.
Okay.
So, you know, a guy with a cowboy hat really needs the net. You know, that is one good thing. You know, God told me I was only going to be 5'8", so the net doesn't have to be quite as high for me to walk through. So, you know, back when I was in high school, I prayed for, can I just have 6 more inches? But, yeah, he said no, so. But anyway, so I'll be doing a lot of that pin maintenance and just be working through that. You know, I've been out actually shed hunting here a little bit.
I was just going to say, we got some shed hunting to report, huh?
Well, and I get to cheat in a way. My nephew does all of our sprayer driving, and we do everything with the ground rig. So he drives over all the fields so he can tell me where he's seen things and everything. Okay. He's picked up some nice sheds over the years. The other thing is he's also ran over a shed or two that popped a tire.
I'm sure.
Which that didn't make my brother very happy. Uh-huh. He hates buying tires. And so, but he kind of gives me an idea. If I talk to him and ask him, he'll tell me where he sees them, where he hasn't. Also where the deer are. Be doing some of that.
Fishing? Got some fishing going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dave likes to fish more as much as I like to hunt.
Okay.
So yeah. It's kind of a good thing. So he's kind of got me out. He's introduced me to other things than, you know, you go to the fishing aisle, and I always wondered why everybody walked by the power bait. I didn't know what else was down there. So mm-hmm. Dave's kind of introduced me to some of those things in the fishing aisle that
there's a lot of places you can't use that stuff. Yeah. It's too effective. So,
yeah. I'm like,
find them in the truck honking the horn waiting on you.
Yeah. So that's been kind of fun.
Okay.
And like I said, in the last podcast, you know, Dave was the one that was out with me on the boat when we took the boat out.
Okay.
And Dave caught a walleye, and I looked at deer with my binoculars. So
there you go.
In fact, Dave and I were talking about going fishing maybe this afternoon, too.
Maybe.
So we might take
that
out.
Take
but
some
so fishing's going to be good.
Yeah. And then coming up soon, we've got a podcast with the Tour of Duty folks.
We do.
Can you talk about that?
I think we're going to try to do that probably the second week in June. After talking to them and as much as I've got to get visit with Cortland and everything that kind of runs that and started that whole thing. Their golf tournament is coming up. Their big fundraiser for the year is coming up the 31st of May. And we talked about doing it prior to, but we're going to hold it afterwards. Okay. That way we can talk about how well the tournament went.
Great.
And I can dedicate a little more time to him because I'd like to get him on to tell us all about the Tour of Duty and what they do, because it's all about getting veterans outdoors and helping them out. So it has been very, very good for them. To do that, they do some great fishing tours, the pheasant hunting at my place over the years, and so you can see some of the pictures are just wonderful.
Tourofduty.org, if anybody listening wants to kind of check it out before we podcast from there.
And then you can see that stuff on there, and they've highlighted one of the pheasant hunts at my place and some of the other stuff. You can see how the golf tournament went last year.
Yeah.
But I was just talking to Cortland this morning, and before the podcast, we got to texting back and forth. And so I asked him, I said, how's it going getting everybody for the golf deal? And he goes, first time ever. Or I don't know if it's about the first time ever, but I do know this is about as early as they've ever sold out.
Wow.
So you can't even get a spot to go golf with
that's
them.
That's amazing.
Wow. So they're ecstatic.
It's tremendous. Okay.
And that's kind of why we moved it off a little bit. So, yeah, the Tour of Duty guys, we're going to get those guys in here probably next month in June.
Okay.
So we'll get them going.
And then we have some ice age and flood age
stuff
going on.
The one of the guys that's really does a lot with the ice age flood tours and everything also is a director and works out of the museum in Wenatchee.
Oh, okay.
And so we've been working with them. I was hoping to get them on this show this week, but because as the longer we talk, the bigger the show becomes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're wanting to give him some more time. So we moved him off of this week, and we might do it next week or probably in the next two podcasts you'll hear from him, because we're going to try to do everything that you can come and see in this area, what they kind of do.
Perfect.
You know, and I need somebody to do that because just like Dave,
I
get excited when
Dave's
looking at Dry Falls, and I'm like, I drove by this every day. I hauled cows by this five times in one day. Yeah. So, you know, it's nice to see that and get those guys in here to talk about stuff that I see all the time that I take sometimes for granted. You know,
there's times I
turn west and I'm looking at the snow-capped mountains like right now. The enchantments are beautiful right now. Mount Stewart. It's hard for people to believe I can see it from my house, but that's just a
direct shot.
It is a direct shot. Looks great.
Neat. All right, so you have some openings and stuff for people that need to come up and see the the unique stuff from the Ice Age.
Yeah.
And, the
and we're booking tours right now, actually. You know, that HRO Adventures page. We got people already, you know, you're talking about this stuff. Let's go look at it.
Perfect.
And so Ron and I are putting that
excellent.
Together.
Excellent. And then I got a turkey hunt. In the works with Fish Hunt Northwest?
Absolutely.
Right.
Got talking to Dwayne the other day, and I keep telling Dwayne, I says, you know, I'm not calling you, but you're not calling me neither. And so we kind of laughed and joked about that a little bit. And but it's springtime where he's fishing, I'm mm-hmm. out doing my thing. And, and so, man, it had been a couple of weeks since I talked to him, so it was really good. He is going to be coming and doing a turkey hunt, it sounds like.
Okay.
So. And of course, Dwayne doesn't go anywhere without fishing. And so we're going to try to get him on the water too. And we're going to show him how, you know, a walleye over here, you know, of course, he knows all this too, but he fishes the Sound so much and over there that he likes those big bright ones. And so we got to show him something that's
very
a little darker
cool.
once in a while and lives on the bottom kind of thing.
Excellent.
Sounds fun.
So, yeah, and I can't wait. I can't wait to get to hear about his turkey hunt and because they like to come over and hunt with Eric and, you know, Habitat Eric.
Yeah.
I don't know. I teased Eric about the other day. He called me up. They had a Fish and Wildlife was out doing lek.
Oh.
Checking on leks, checking on old leks. You know, we had that monster fire that came through a couple of years ago and burned, I don't know, 2 dozen, 3 dozen leks that just around our area here in Central Washington. And so where did the birds go? Or are they coming back to those leks? Or are they moving to other ones? And so now they're even looking at ones that they know that the birds had used 20, 40 years ago. Are we going back to those now? Or how is it working? And so anyway, Eric and I were talking because they're having to get permission from landowners to get on some of this land to go look at these things.
Yeah.
And so Eric and I were talking and we, just like always, Eric and I get to, we cover the business, you know, of yes, you can have, you know, access and here's how we would, you know, we would like you to do it and how you want to do it. And we work it all out. And then we talk for another hour on, you know, hey, what have you been seeing? You know, how's the fishing going? You know, you seen any turkeys? You know, I see your son shot 2 turkeys already, you know, and I saw, like, in fact, I just saw last night on Facebook that I think one of Eric's friends got the slam already, the Washington Slam this year. So,
sure did.
He's got that turkey fever, you know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if we opened the button.
Yeah, it's the bird flu, basically.
Yeah, it's the bird flu. That's exactly right. You know, but if we unbuttoned his shirt, there'd be a little, you know.
There'd be a beard in
there.
There'd
be a beard right there, yeah.
Thanks for putting that image in there. All right. Well, guys, we're approaching the end of our time here, and just want to thank Dave for being on the podcast and also providing a spot for us. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Anytime.
And Rusty, it's great to see you again.
Yeah, really good to see you, Dave.
Yeah.
We talk all the time.
Yeah.
But it's good to see you.
Yeah. We got to put these computers away and get outside. That's
absolutely.
What we gotta do,
so. Absolutely.
All right. Well, that concludes episode number 8. We'll see everybody again on the Hidden Ranch Outfitters page and the HRO Adventures page. You want to give them the address?
Yep, HROAdventures.com and HiddenRanchOutfitters.com are the two web pages to go to and see about Jackie and I and what we're offering. And come over and see us.
Yeah, yeah. Look up Rusty for all these different adventures. Other than that, take care. Be safe. We'll talk to you on the next one.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye, guys.
Right.